on this episode is brought to you by Vinegar Syndrome. Vinegar Syndrome puts out the best and, well, worst in sleaze, exploitation, and sexy time movies, old man porn, as Blaine likes to call them, and you should definitely check it out. So go over and support our sponsors if you get a chance. Check out their package from September that came out with a couple great films to watch this October. Trip with a Teacher, a nice sleazy slasher exploitation film. Orgy of the Dead, an Ed Wood classic, I guess. And Psychos in Love, a lost film that's been found, a really weird, bizarre, gory something or other. Good movies for your October needs. So check out what Vinegar's got going on. They got some sales that just happened, some more coming up, and just go support them. And right after I'm done plugging them, you're going to hear Don the Dragon Wilson talking about a contest where you can win a copy of one of his films called Martial Arts Kid, decidedly less sleazy than what Vinegar Syndrome puts out, though Don has his share of sleaze in his career. So support Don, support Vinegar, and stay tuned for this episode on killing Nazis.
Vinegar Syndrome, who has been supportive of us since we basically begged them to become a sponsor of us in the beginning, right, Blaine?
That's right, yeah, man, because we've already covered probably about five or six of their titles and probably a whole lot more. So, yeah, no,
right.
You know, big thanks to those guys, and so excited to see what they keep putting out, because their rollout last month was pretty much everything that I could want. So, I'm not complaining.
And speaking of their recent rollouts, we just got sent a handful of their stuff that we'll be talking about soon in our little Vinegar Syndrome segment. I've got Orgy of the Dead sitting on my desk, which I've never seen.
Oh, I'm so jealous. love that piece of shit.
Oh, yeah. Ed Wood, right? It's an Ed Wood movie.
Oh, yeah. It's an Ed Wood movie with, like, it's basically just go-go dancers for about an hour and 20 minutes. And the dances go on like way too long, and it's just so much fun. It's a great party movie.
Awesome. My wife, I don't think seen any Ed Wood. I've only seen a little, and I she saw the pile of DVD Blu-rays and was like, "What the hell is this?" And I said, "Oh, you know how when people make fun of low budget movies and you see them doing like holding like a paper plate as a moon? Yeah, that's an Ed Wood movie for real." So
right.
So this is gonna be fun. And then I also have Psychos in Love, another one I haven't seen, and Trip with the Teacher, which sounds really, really interesting as well. So they all look sufficiently trashy and smutty, and also all of them sound pretty bloody and horror related in a lot of ways. So I'm pretty stoked about that.
Oh yeah, and I am so curious what Psychos in Love is, because that's a movie I've never even heard of, but. Yeah, I love Trip with Teacher. I've got a very, very, very shitty copy of it that's, you can like see like a few different layers of like the characters on it. It's really bad. So I'm curious to see what that looks like when it's not so distracting.
Yeah, and it'll probably be pretty interesting. I've never seen any of those, so I'm pretty stoked to see them. And you'll get a chance to check them out too, Blaine, and we'll get a chance to talk about those. So thanks again to Vinegar Syndrome, our perennial smut masters here, who are helping us out with some cool stuff to talk about. So so today, like I said, our sponsor, as per usual, is Vinegar Syndrome. So thanks, guys, and you'll also hear right now, right before we get into the movies, a short little interview I did with the one and only Don the Dragon Wilson about another sponsorship we have and a giveaway for this episode.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for checking out this podcast. And before we get into it, I wanted to introduce the co-star of Paying Mr. Maggette, an upcoming action comedy film. I guess that's the best way to put it. And an awesome movie that hopefully you guys get to check out soon. Don the Dragon Wilson. Hi, Don. How are you?
I'm doing very good. Very good.
So we're this episode of the Grindhouse Messiah podcast is about some movies where Nazis get their asses kicked. Because, you know, in this world, I felt like we needed to talk a little bit about that. Maybe just get that off of our chest a bit. But one of the things we're doing with this podcast, we're giving away two copies of another film that you were in. That kind of about standing up for what you believe. Can you tell folks a little bit about Martial Arts Kid?
Well, Martial Arts Kid is, like the title, it's got a little similar story to The Karate Kid, of course, which is very popular. And the Martial Arts Kid is a troubled teen who, through the martial arts, improves his life, and the lessons he learns in the dojo, and they translate into his everyday life, and they make him a better person and better able to deal with the difficulties of childhood, you know.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, I didn't realize it, but bullying is a big problem in America, and he faces up to the bully once he gets confidence and gets a little bit of self-defense, you know, knowledge that he can stand up to this bully that's picking on him. So, yeah, it has, you know, a happy ending, of course, and it's a family film and was given 5 doves by the Dove Foundation, which is the biggest family rating organization in the world, really. They do all the American films. To give you an example of how well 5 doves is, it's their top recommendation. Shrek got 3 doves.
There you go. So,
yeah, we're right up here with the big guys.
And so, everyone who's listening here, all you got to do is check out the show notes, and you'll see that you can enter real simple by sending out a tweet. It's going to be real simple to enter, and when you do that, you'll be eligible to win one of these 2 copies of the movie. And again, you know, maybe it's a little bit different than bashing Nazis' heads in with a baseball bat. This is a family film. This is one that, you know, if you got some kids, it's a great one. My kids love the film. And so definitely check it out and enter this, and, you know, keep your eyes out for Paying Mr. Maggette, upcoming film starring Marcus Taylor.
Tell me what happened. I just got off the phone with Teddy, and he tells me that you did not pick up his laundry.
I got it, Mrs. R.
Doesn't sound like you got it. Give me one more time.
I got it. You didn't see me, but I saw you.
Yo, OG, what are you doing? OG, what you doing? You just sitting there with your muscle shirt on. Who this chick?
I'm a key demographic.
Let go. Put your hands up.
I ain't got no money.
Don't you think for a second that was me?
Do you know who I am?
Of course I do. You think I wouldn't be here with a beautiful woman like you and I know your name? I don't play like that.
She cheated on me.
With who?
Look.
All right, we're going to take care of it. No problem.
I'm going to pull everyone in. I want this guy tonight.
Even a Japanese guy.
It's all right. It's okay. I'm cool flying alone over the Central Bay.
Yo, man, I can't talk right now, man. I'm being chased by some monster Yakuza with breathing dudes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Seriously?
Oh.
Kick his ass!
That's him!
You know what Mr. Maggette is like. I don't want to have to deal with him.
And we're going to talk about this, all right?
No! What the...
A, B, C, D, E, F.
I've had a very hard day.
Ladies!
I didn't say nothing.
This is gonna be an all-night ass kicking.
Yes!
That was
was about 20 seconds. A lot longer than I thought it would take.
You really look like sh**. Bad day?
So, Don, how can people check out what's going on with Mr. Maggette with this upcoming film?
Well, you know, there's a website, the Paying Mr. Maggette site, and that's, of course, you can always go to Traditions Entertainment, and they will post the release date and film festivals. Right now it's in the festival circuit. It's played a few festivals and done really well. And so they'll do that for a while, and then at a certain point they will make a distribution deal for the DVD and for the video download and for the television sales.
Very, very awesome. So check that out. I have the links to the website for Paying Mr. Maggette, as well as the Facebook group, and you guys can check that stuff out. And Don, thanks for stopping by, and hopefully we can have you on for a little bit longer to maybe talk some of your old kick-ass martial arts exploitation films, because those are kind of up our alley.
Cindy, I don't think this is going to work.
It is going to work. We just have to give him a chance.
Look, I know he's been through a lot. He's been traumatized. He's damaged.
You should bring him to the martial arts school. Teach him discipline, be the father figure for him, put him on a positive path. I think we'll change his whole life around. He's a good kid. He just needs a chance.
This is just the kind of thing that could escalate into something far more dangerous.
I hope you all get into this giveaway, because it's going to be a lot of fun. The movie they're giving away, Martial Arts Kid, a little more family fare, but damn, it's a fun one. And if you like things like The Karate Kid, I think you'll dig it. So those of you who are listening to us that have children and want something you can watch with your kids and not completely destroy their lives by putting it on, like you would probably do if you put on the movies that we were talking about today, yeah, check it out. All you got to do is retweet, follow, and you're in. And so you'll see in the show notes the exact rules. Please spread the love, and there's two copies of those coming out real soon. So thanks for entering that. Thanks for listening. And let's talk about some movies.
All right, let's hop in.
Since we didn't introduce ourselves yet, you guys know me. I'm Justin. I run the Farsighted blog, or FarsightedBlog.com, a.k.a. The Farsighted, as well as co-host this podcast with my beautiful, lovely co-host, Blaine McLaren.
That's me. Yes, absolutely. Your beautiful, beautiful co-host.
You know, when, I started out one of those Saraha things that people had where you can, like, leave, you know, anonymous notes to people. And the first note I got was, great podcast co-host, So-So Kisser. And I was like, oh, gee, thanks, Blaine. But, so, yeah, I think I'm a pretty good kisser, but, you know. I'm not known for my world-renowned hand jobs like you are. So.
I know, and I mean it's just too much tongue, man. Sometimes it just keeps me too busy. It kind of distracts me. But no, in all seriousness, I'm Blaine McLaren. Yeah, I'm a writer over at the farsightedblog.com, as well as a co-host of another show on this great network, Misspent Matinee, with my ex-wife's new husband, Chris, and we've got new episodes dropping soon. I owe like. I don't know, around 19 reviews for the site that I will eventually get done. But it's we had Irma come through this week and knock out power and kind of slow things down. But we're back. We're going. It's Atlanta. We shut down if there's just a little bit of rain and wind. So, hey, we're back. And let's talk about these. These, I guess we call them deplorables.
Nazi killing movies? I don't know what we're called. Nazi killing flicks? I don't know. The first film that we want to talk about is Green Room. It's a newer film that hopefully most of y'all have seen. We're going to spoil it a little probably, so if you haven't seen it, I'm sorry, but I will try not to get too spoilery. I will say that it's the kind of movie that I've seen multiple times, and it rewards future viewing, so I don't think spoiling it's gonna really ruin it much anyway.
All right.
I can get you guys a solid gig.
Matinee tomorrow, doors at 1, you guys are on at 3.
gentlemen.
You're trapped. Things have gone south. It won't end well.
You can't keep us here, man. You gotta let us go.
We're not keeping you. You're just staying.
Shoot who is left.
Let him bleed.
Get ready to run.
Here we go.
Careful now.
This will be over soon, gentlemen.
So, Green Room, I'll just quickly synopsize that. It's about a punk band called the Ink Rights, or as it says on the billboard, the Aren't Rights, early in the film. And the Ink Rights are a band from, around D.C. area, and they're on tour where they're making, you know, $0 to $10 a day to try to figure out how to fuel their vehicle to get home, and they roll into town at this place, and the cool-ass punk kid who booked them a show unfortunately lost his venue, and so their show they were coming in for didn't work out, but they got to play at a lunch buffet, at a Chinese buffet, so that was pretty cool. and from there, though, he gets them a gig to make up for it. It turns out it's at a club who's going to pay them probably the best they've ever been paid as a band, but it's for a bunch of, as the kid explains, boots and braces. So when someone says boots and braces, what are they talking about, Blake?
Oh yeah, I mean they're talking about skinheads, but like you hear them respond right away. He's like, there's like a lot of boots and braces, and he's, you know, they fly through the, you know, seven different divisions in punk rock of different skinheads, and
right.
And I always love his response where he's like, pretty right wing, but also really far left, which I always love that
line.
That's
so funny. Where he's like, yeah. Right wing or technically ultra far left, I think he says something like that.
Yes, something along those lines. So it always cracks me up because it's like, I miss the old punk rock days where you're like, oh, he's a skin. Well, it's like, is he a sharp? Is he, you know, is he Combat 88? Is he this? Is he that? It's, first of all, they're
fucking
nerds.
Right, so those who are listening to this, yeah, right. Those who are listening to this podcast who didn't grow up in a punk scene, right? Most people think of skinheads as neo-Nazi racists. And that's not necessarily the case at all. The skinhead movement actually started in Jamaica amongst young black kids, actually. It migrated over to working class England, where some of the factions over there became quite racist and some of them were quite not. And then that kind of bled here into the American punk scene. And from there, obviously, the largest known factions were kind of adopted into the you know, white supremacist ranks. But I hung out with a lot of skins in high school, and the skins I hung out with were all sharp kids, like you said, which stands for Skinheads Against Racial Prejudice. Because I used to go to meetings of the Anti-Racist Action up in North Jersey, which has chapters, I think, still around the country. And a lot of them were punk kids involved in things like Food Not Bombs and all those other organizations at the time. And so I got to know a lot of sharp kids. So just a little brief, if you hear the term skinhead, it doesn't always mean what you think it means. But in this case of this movie, it means what you think it means.
It would be a super boring movie if it didn't.
Right. Well, and we find out they play a gig there, and they play a pretty kick-ass gig. It's a lot of heavy, hard punk rock, more metal-influenced stuff from their early career. And it's good stuff. And the one thing they do initially is they start off their set by playing the classic Dead Kennedys song, Nazi Punk Fuck Off, which it may have been a little bit of a risky move. I don't know that I would have done it. Then again, I probably wouldn't have played a show at that venue.
But what's so cool about that, and I mean, I know I'm kind of jumping ahead, but I just don't want to forget about this part, is, okay, so they go up there, they play Nazi Punk's Fuck Off. You can see everybody getting pissed off. They're spitting beer, flicking cigarettes at him, all that. And as soon as they're done, I love the response. It was just like, that was a cover. And everybody, then they kick right into their music, and everyone, it's just like immediately, it's like, okay, even all these kids that are all, skins and, You know, they're there to, you know, Sig Heil and do all that bullshit. They're like instantly forgiving because they're in all honesty, most of those people at that at the beginning of the film are just kids. They're just punk rock kids who, you
right.
know, what they're really there for is just to hear some fucking cool music. So I always right. like, it's like immediately it's like diffused, like
right, and the crowd gets way into their set by like the third song, they're going nuts. So,
yeah,
like,
and it looks like they almost kind of respect them for messing with them a little, and I just love that.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think there is kind of a weird respect then, you know. And they play, like I said, I think they really like that. It's heavy, it's hard, it's good, clean punk rock. Well, not clean. That's probably not right because it's pretty messy. But you know what yeah. I mean. They don't really play the tightest set, but they play a lot of real heavy, good stuff, and it's fun. And so they kind of go through that set. They're getting ready to leave, and then shit gets real, and all because the girl in the band. Whose name escapes me, both her real name and her name in real
Sam. Her name
Sam,
in the film is it. Sam, but she's played by Aaliyah Shawkat from...
Aaliyah Shawkat, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
From Arrested Development fame.
I, of course, maybe I shouldn't say, but I don't really like that show. But, yeah, I know, right? I'm sorry. But I like her a lot in the movie Whip It and some other stuff, you know. So Aaliyah Shawkat as Sam, she left her charger in the green room. They were told to leave, not to go back in there, and of course the reason they were told to leave is bad shit's going on in there, and Anton Yelchin's character, rest in peace to the amazing actor that I know the world misses as far as I'm concerned, he goes back to grab it, barely even notices initially that something bad is happening, and then he catches it and he goes, oh shit, and he tries to run out, and then they get locked in the green room, and the rest of this movie is kind of like almost a siege movie in a sense, or kind of like they're locked in trying, but they have to get out and they don't know how to get out. They're trying to figure out their way out and they don't know if people are trying to get in, and it's all a mess. And the Nazis are kind of led by Macon Blair, and then of course the big bad of this film, the guy who owns the club, is Sir Patrick Stewart, in what I think is probably one of my favorite roles he's done in a long time.
Are you saying that you like this role better than all that voice work he does for those Dragonheart sequels?
Yes. You like that? That was, there was no pause there. I do think that maybe he might have been better just because of how batshit crazy he was at Professor X and Logan. But I really like him, and those are, I think this is one of the best roles he's done in a long time. I really like it.
Oh yeah, I mean, and everybody is so solid in the movie because I'm not sure about you, but I've been a big fan of Jeremy Saunier as he's came up. So it's great to see, you know, because for me, like, the two big standouts in the movie are Macon Blair's character as Gabe.
Amazing.
Yeah, he's kind of like amazing. The right-hand man, but he seems a little hesitant. Then you've also got fucking big Eric Edelstein playing Big Justin, the bouncer, who I just think is just... He stands out so well above everybody else in the, because a lot of the tension really builds around those early moments where, you know, when they first get, they're first locked in the room and the siege begins, because everyone's trying to negotiate this like real people
right.
would. To me, I always think, okay, this is like if Assault on Precinct 13 was real instead of being like, you know,
a
crazy Western, you know, with right. gang members. But yeah, so I love his scenes on there where he becomes, you know, basically a bargaining chip, and when they're having that conversation about bullets and cartridges, it's just he seems like a guy that would be super cool if you, like, you know, ran into him at a bar, but you would always
right.
know that he was dangerous. And I think a lot of these characters have that where. It's not like, okay, because like a lot of, especially when we talk about like 70s grindhouse cinema, a lot of B films that are, you know, based around Nazis, they're usually just kind of this one-dimensional, like, evil, no matter what they are, they're evil. In these movies, it's like everyone is three-dimensional. There are all these different aspects to
right.
these, to them, where they treat every character, even, you know, even these terrible Nazis with a level of humanity that makes you
right.
kind of, you care. I mean, you kind of have sympathy for everybody in these situations because holy shit, none of them wanted that to happen.
Right.
And if,
the only real douchebag is the one who did what he did in that room. You know what I mean? Like, there's one real asshole, to be honest, and everybody else is kind of like an asshole with maybe some humanity still.
Yeah, it's all situational. For the skinheads, it's a business. It's a business problem. And then of course for the ain't rights.
It's
nothing personal against them. They didn't. It's not like they pissed somebody off out there for their views. It's not, because they played Nazi punks fuck off. It's because they're at the wrong place at the wrong time. And I think that is one of the coolest things, because in all of Jeremy Saulnier's films, I love how he injects like reality into these fantastic genre tropes.
Saulnier was a born and bred punk rock kid, and I've heard him talk a bunch. I have some mutual friends with him, I've made a point to listen to him talk an awful lot. I also have talked for a few years now to Tony Rettman, a writer who got to actually do something called Green Room Radio as a lead up to the movie, a little punk. It was like a 8 or 10 episode podcast, and he's a guy I've talked to for a few years now, and he got to know Jeremy pretty well, and just talking about him growing up in the scene and growing up in a scene that was infiltrated often by the Nazi skinheads coming to shows trying to ruin shit and whatever. That he wanted to inject them in a screenplay and make it something, whatever. But the cool thing is, like, if you were to change the band to something else and the Nazis to something else, as long as there was some kind of tension between those two groups, this movie could work in a million different settings. Which shows that I think the movie is just so well done that it does that. Even though I prefer it in this setting, I'm glad it's in this setting, but that's something that resonates with me. I think that it just shows how good a film it is.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely, and that really speaks to like actual good storytelling, where it could have been in any two groups, because with Siege films, it all it matters is kind of us and them, but Jeremy Saulnier, just between the writing and direction and everything, it's so much more than that.
And I'd like to revisit Blue Ruin, his film Blue Ruin, one day on this podcast too. So definitely, which Macon Blair, the Gabe in this movie and the lead in Blue Ruin, I love him as an actor. And I even love he did his directorial debut this year with Elijah Wood and why am I going blank on Megan? An actress that you recognize if you're into these kind of like these B movies, and they're really 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 fantastic in his which is I don't feel at home in this world anymore. It's on Netflix. He did it for Netflix. Really awesome movie if you're into Macon Blair, and this Jeremy Saulnier type of writing. I definitely think there's a big influence there. But back to this film, right? So with that in mind, right? This movie, when I say killing Nazis is only part of this movie, because the Nazis are killing them too. This isn't like, our next film when we talk about Inglourious Basterds, which we're really talking about. The whole plot of that movie is killing Nazis. Like, there's nothing, that's what it is. But this film, it's about these kids who are forced to figure out a way to, get out of there with their own lives. And without ruining anything for real, it turns at some point to not just be getting out alive, but to getting vengeance. To getting it and getting it done. And I really, really, I like that. I love Yelchin in it. I love, Imogen Poots in it a lot, I've only seen her a few times before. Philly's own Mark Weber, dude, he is awesome in this movie. He doesn't have nearly as much screen time as I'd like him to, but man, he plays, the kid from the beginning's cousin who's part of this group and how he got the show set up for them. His entire role is really, really, really cool. And you mentioned too, with the humanity aspect of these guys, there's a few, Macon Blair, for example, Gabe, I think he is such an interesting character that by the end, I kind of root for him.
I'm in the same boat where you can just tell as everything escalates, he's so far over his head, and every decision that's made, you can tell it's like weighing on his soul more and more. Like, he was never cut out for that kind of life, and yeah, I mean, to me, it starts getting painful with him, watching him have to keep escalating to this next, because he wants to solve it immediately, but yeah, no, it's awesome.
Definitely. And as far as, like, looking at this from, like, you know, one of the things we like to do with the kind of faith-based point of view, obviously anything to do with race relations, Nazis and things is very much part of my worldview and exploring, because I think that reconciliation and people all being equal is a huge part of how I approach life, you know. But more so with this film, one of the things being I think just something about leaning on each other, the characters having to lean on each other for survival. I think it says something about, like I'm trying to think of how to word what I'm saying, but like how it's important to not try to get through shit in life alone, because if you do it alone, it ain't gonna work. So like they need each other in order to make it work, and each one of them balances each other in some way. You know, you got the drummer, Joe, I think his name is, who's like a tough ass, you know, right. and he's like, he's with a championship, you know, like state championship wrestler in high school or something. So he can do an arm bar to, you know, stop Justin, the big dude, from moving. You know, he's not scared to use a gun, this kind of stuff, to like the crazy wilding out singer, to like Alia Shawkat being like a little bit of a balance for them, to Anton Yelchin being kind of the voice of like leadership for that. Like, it's a whole lot like that together, and not only is it them, but then Imogen Poots, who is not part of their band and initially part of that skinhead group, becomes part of their group because she's trying to live too and escape too. And so sometimes it's kind of like you have to find allies in people that you don't necessarily think are your allies initially, you know. And and that's important too, you know. I don't know, something about all that kind of goes into my worldview, and I think it speaks to me really directly.
Right, because, I mean, they're all forced into a situation where the only drive is, you know, like, not to sound like a bad movie trailer, but, you know, to survive the night, you know?
Right.
To make sure, and if as that group dwindles, it becomes harder and harder for them to be able to make any headway, hey, you cut out, but yeah, no, I know. Okay. Oh, sorry, man. But yeah, no, okay. I think that's really evident throughout the film, and it speaks to a lot of my worldview as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, that's awesome. And, you know, I think that obviously you and I share a lot in our worldview. So, I think that has a lot to do with why we are able to talk about these and vibe so much with them, even though our tastes in films are not always the same, as we've explored with things like Sweet Sugar and Werewolves on Wheels that you somehow think are good movies. So I don't know.
I don't claim they're good movies. I just like them.
You just like them. Fair. No, that's fair. I shouldn't say that you said you they were good movies. You definitely did not say that.
and I'm glad that I'm on this show with you, because I accidentally get to watch good movies like we did this week.
That's awesome. Oh, speaking of good movies, right? So I think Green Room was one of the best of last year. I definitely think, as far as like horror adjacent films, it was like one of my top. And as far as films as a whole, it was probably in my top five, definitely in my top 10. I don't recall exactly where I ranked it, but it's certainly up there. When I saw that in the movie theater, dude, I went alone in a movie theater. I don't know. You probably had that experience before, where you go to a movie and there's no one else there at all.
Right.
Right, so I saw it middle of the day. I took an extended lunch break from work because I needed to see this movie, and I didn't think it was one that my wife should see until I see it, because I've explained before on this podcast and to you that, like, sometimes gore gets her, and I'd seen Blue Ruin, and I know the potential of there being a lot of blood and guts. And she's watched it since, actually, and I think being at home, it's doable. I don't know if she would have been able to handle that tension in the theater. But I'm alone in this theater, and it's pitch black, and I'm watching it, and I am jumping and reacting and like screaming fuck, you know, and because the movie was so damn tense. It's just the tension in that film is so, so tight. So, I mean, a great, great film, and then also, you know, just it excites me more and more to see what Jeremy Saulnier is up to next. You know, I think he's going to be awesome, like, just continually.
Oh, yeah, I mean, and he's only put out, you know, just great material, because one thing I want to touch was on some of the, even the early stuff, because I remember years and years ago, back when, you know, we still had Blockbuster videos and stuff, I came across the movie Murder Party, which I'm not sure if you've ever seen it, but it's his first
movie. I won't endorse it as great, but I think it's a really, really interesting film.
Yeah, I really liked it. I don't think it's great or anything like that, but it was like just this out of the blue, completely different kind of horror flick. And I was so excited, because then when I started hearing, you know, people talking about Blue Ruin, I was like, oh, why do these guys seem so familiar? And Blue Ruin, I still think, is one of the best movies of, you know, the 2010s. I think it's going to stand up long term as like an actual classic across the board, not just with genre fans and indie people, but also, you know, kind of cross that line. But with that said, I mean, I love Green Room. I'll watch it probably at least once a year, probably for the rest of my life. But yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it's really an intense, you know, hour and 40 minutes.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not long, it's tight. But it is really intense. I mean, there's from once the, you feel like everything's kind of, you know, like cool and whatever, once it hits that moment, you know, what, 15, 20 minutes in, and you really kind of hit that tension, it does not stop. And until that last moment, and the very, very, very last moment of the film, that I absolutely love the dog at the end. I'll just leave it at that. I can't help but, like, it's like almost tear-jerking worthy for me. Like, the loyalty of a dog, man. Damn it. But yeah, so that was Green Room. And as we mentioned before, and we mentioned leading up to this, our next movie is all about killer bots. So why don't you introduce Inglourious Basterds?
Ten Hut!
I'm putting together a special team. We're going to be doing one thing and one thing only. Killing Nazis.
Sound good?
Yes, sir!
Rise! 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 Red sign up in the obituary. What happened to us? Where's your anger? Where's your fucking rage? What a difference we've lost. Let your privilege, denial, and self-gratified. A tradition passed down to obligated.
Okay, yeah, this is the 2009 Quentin Tarantino movie Inglourious Basterds. Basically, in Nazi-occupied France during World War II, they put together a plan to assassinate Nazi leaders by a group of Jewish U.S. soldiers, the Basterds, and it ends up working with a theater owner and her plan of revenge to get back at him. And what you get is just pure unbridled mayhem by Tarantino. I think he takes the route of understanding that if you go after bad guys, you can be as fucking brutal and insane as you want, which I love that mechanic he uses. So you get a brutal, 2 hours and 40 minutes of just pretty much just killing Nazis. But then you also get these great performances, that come out of, a lot of your regulars, but also this is one of the first times we got to see him really use Christoph Waltz. So when he does that intro, I mean, it's absolutely one of the greatest performances to open a film. And then introduced to the bastards, and then Michael Fassbender coming into the play. The thing is, I know I'm just naming just cool shit I like for this movie, but that's what it is. It's just a movie of cool shit to have a good time. And what did you think? What's kind of your experience with Inglourious Basterds?
So on an upcoming episode of my very rarely released The Far Side of the podcast, I'm going to be arguing with my friend of the website, Brendan Foley from Synapse and Cinepunks, about Quentin Tarantino, who he loves everything Tarantino's done, and I think he's about half awesome and half shitty. But Inglourious Basterds is one of my favorite films he ever did. I love this film. I loved it from the first time I saw it. It is and it's just the characters are maybe to a certain extent some of them feel very real. A lot of them feel like kind of over the top. But that's cool. It's very caricature-ish. Brad Pitt's character, the way he speaks, being from the South, known as Aldo the Apache because he's part Native American, is pretty great.
I believe he says he's part Injun.
Yeah, I got a little Injun in me, I believe is what it says. So I got some Injun in me. Yeah, I know. We're just really politically correct in true Quentin Tarantino fashion. Aldo the Apache, he tells all of the guys who join the Bastards, you all owe me a debt of 100 Nazi scalps. And I love the way he says Nazi, and I love the way he speaks in general, and the way he, his resting pose is with his bottom lip sticking out. He's all like, it's just the thought about his appearance is so great. The characters in the Bastards are awesome. Eli Roth, who a lot of people absolutely hate him as a filmmaker, I think he is a true film nerd and seems like an awesome dude, even though he's a little bit bro-ish. But as a filmmaker, I'm always hit or miss on him. But Eli Roth, as an actor in this film, because he's basically just playing a dude from Boston who likes to beat Nazis with baseball bats, it's awesome. Nothing else. I mean, like, he comes out with his baseball bat and his wife beater on with his, and he's jacked. I mean, the dude definitely is a jacked dude. He comes out with his muscles raging, and he just, and you think he's like gonna be this tough guy, but then he talks with that really thick Boston accent, and he just announces that he's Teddy Williams at the plate, and he and he bashes a guy's head in. Holy hell, it's amazing! It's amazing, and even like the other character actors, like guys like Sam Levine from Freaks and Geeks, man. He's only in a couple little scenes, but he's great. He's great. And
BJ Novak?
BJ Novak's amazing. They say that when Christoph Waltz has the two of them sitting down, and he tells BJ Novak that we have a name for you too, and I forget what it is. It's like
It's the little man.
The little man. And he goes, "You guys call me the little man?" He seems so upset about it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just something about his reaction and that whole thing is just phenomenal. Like, it's just so good. And I'm just like throwing seeds out. But man, when it's Brad Pitt, Eli Roth, and another guy whose name escapes me are there dressed up as guests for the movie, the film, when they're about to commit their plan, and they're Christoph Waltz, who speaks perfect Italian, and they're pretending to be Italian, thinking that he won't be able to speak Italian. starts talking to them. They obviously don't speak Italian at all. And he's asking them to pronounce their names. And, oh my God. So, like, the least Italian pronunciation. It's like Cordoni, and he goes, Cordoni. 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 You know, and it's just like, nope, that's not how it'd be pronounced. And then Eli Roth is trying so hard when he's doing his, like, extremely fake Italian, and everything he says, he uses his hands, like, and it's so forced. It's so great. It's so hilarious. I also love the fact that Quentin Tarantino, in trying to keep with some reality, cast almost exclusively Jewish actors. You know, Brad Pitt isn't Jewish, I don't believe, but Eli Roth is Jewish, Sam Levine is Jewish, BJ Novak is Jewish, you know, I like that. Like, I thought that was a cool little flair that I just picked up on. As far as in picking these Jewish American guys, he picked actual Jewish American guys. So I thought that was pretty cool too.
Yeah, and I think that's super important when you're like when you're making like a historical fantasy like this, where it's like these are you know Jews 50 years later being able to act out this awesome over the top fantasy of basically destroying the Nazi Party over the course of two and a half hours. So yeah, no, it's great that they do make sure that they're all Jewish actors, with the exception of the bastards of my favorite character of the movie, played by Till Schweiger, which is Sergeant Hugo Schlitz,
who's just a regular German guy,
Stiglitz,
who turns on the other. He turns on the other Germans, right?
Yeah.
And he turns on him and just kills people in his own ranks. And then they break him out of jail and take him with them. Like, right. Hey, you're with us, you know?
Yeah, because I think that's one of the best set pieces in the film is when they are busting him out. And you see, like, each Nazi in the jail kind of disappear and bleed and split and then get shot. And then you just see Hugo Stiglitz. I keep mispronouncing his name. But you see him just sitting calmly, lighting a cigarette, and Aldo the Apache comes in and said, "You know, we're a big fan of your work and want to see if you want to go pro." I think that is just such a good fucking line.
Oh yeah, he's like, "We're real big fans of your amateur work. We're hoping you'd go pro or whatever it is." And it's such a great line, and you know the way he talks. Like, there's something about every time Brad Pitt talks that just captures the film for me. Like, he's just so good. He's so good.
yeah, and he's one of those actors that I'll kind of sleep on, I'll kind of forget, and then I'll go through his his IMDb page, and I'm like, holy shit, he is good. He is immensely likable in so many films, from True Romance all the way, all the way through films like this, and of course.
Well, even in films I don't love, I like him in, actually. Like, there's some, I thought Burn After Reading, for example, was mostly annoying, and yet his, like, over-the-top stupidity of his character is so funny, and there's something about the way he does it. Like, so, yeah, right, I mean, obviously he's a great actor. There's just no ifs, ands, or buts about it, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, and can I mention my, what may be one of my favorite scenes in a long
time? Yeah.
It's when Melanie Laurent's character, Shoshana from, at the beginning, escapes from the Nazis. She's running the theater, and as they're making the decision to do their final, their final attack, and you start hearing "Cat People" by David Bowie play, and it just breaks into this awesome kind of like dance, preparation sequence. It's just those moments where you're like, holy cow, Quentin Tarantino is so cool. Like, because I think, a lot of our generation, whether, you like all of his work or don't, I'm a big fan of probably all of his movies, to be honest with you. But I always think, like, these are the flourishes of the all the best stuff you see from that era of 60s, 70s, and 80s B cinema, all thrown into this one, like, A-list actor movie. And, God, that scene every single time gets me so pumped up for the end of the film, where I almost get kind of bummed when it goes back to the bastards, because I'm just so excited to see what's going to happen later.
Right. I mean, and even when I say I think some of Tarantino is shit, you know, and I said that earlier, is I just, I think he walks that fine line of paying homage and straight up ripping off. And sometimes the ripping off is just too much for me. Now that said, I think he's not doing it out of trying to be a ripoff artist. He is doing it because he loves film. And he loves grindhouse film, and he loves the kind of film we talk about here. Man, that's what he loves. You know, and so I can't give him shit for that. I mean, hell, he would be the most amazing guest to ever have on a podcast.
Yeah, but we never talk.
Or like Eli Roth for that matter, like we just brought up, because he's more into the horror side of things, but boy, does he love exploitation art, you know, and that kind of, you know, he is, and he knows this shit. Like, they're both film nerds, and Eli Roth co-directed this film, which people don't realize. I mean, it was really still a Tarantino film, but he directed certain scenes, and he had a lot of influence in some of the decisions, because Tarantino kind of brought him in, and from what I could hear, he brought him in because he wanted a Jewish American as part of the team, you know, and they're good friends, you know, so he was like, I want a guy who's actually, and I'm pretty sure if I read correctly, Eli Roth has descendants who died in the Holocaust, so he wanted someone who would be, you know, connected in that way to just say, you know, hey, you know, you have some say, here's part of your vengeance, your, you know, whatever, with this film. And so I think that shows a little bit, but I think it also is just, there is some style in the film that does feel Eli, which is not bad, because I like certain parts of his style, so.
Oh, yeah, and I think including him kind of adds that level of authenticity where you can feel just, like, kind of the glee of just, killing that final scene, because, like I mentioned before, I think it's very intentional with the kind of movie that Tarantino wanted to make that he picked Nazis, because the level of violence mixed with the KMB effects that are just super, you know, super real, like ultra realism kind of gore, and just that final scene where I don't think you could ever take a group of people, put them in a burning locked movie theater while Jewish American soldiers literally just fire into crowds, killing them, you know, killing them like fish in a barrel, before blowing them up and flinging, you know, and you think about how they just annihilate Hitler's face. It's so smart on his side. You know, it's like, I want to make this kind of modern Western over the top, you know, revenge film. Pick Nazis. Nobody's going to root against, you're going to get an R rating. No one's going to give a shit about that. No one's going to complain that you annihilate Hitler's face. Fuck that guy. So I just think it's such a smart way to also kind of remove yourself from, you know, the MPAA and social
criticism. Saying, oh, we're not going to give you the R. No, we'll give you the R. It's Nazi. Fucking, we want people to see this.
Exactly. And remember, there is a lot of kind of blowback coming on Tarantino as well because of his other films, the use of the N-word, you know, and everything like that, where he kind of needed to make a movie his style that touched, that still hit the points he wants to touch on, which is always, you know, kind of like race, revenge, all these kind of aspects that you see in all of his films, but also do it in a way that was safe and just, and I think it's so smart because it allowed him, if he would have hit another film along the lines of the earlier work, you know, moving into Django Unchained, I don't think we would have gotten Django or Hateful Eight. Because I think, especially with how sensitive...
to have the license to be able to say the things they say. I mean, people still debate that, obviously, that, you know, this white guy, you know, uses the amount of times that movie... Django. I mean, Django alone has got to have more uses of the N-word than any film in history. It's got to.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, and I'm on the side of, it's not really my place to make to weigh in on it. You know, I enjoy his writing. I think he tries his best to write to the characters, but I'm not a minority. I can't put myself in that situation of how that feels with those mouthpieces, you know, being by a, you know, a nerdy white dude in his early 50s. So,
well, yeah, and if the black community is okay with it, I'm okay with it. If they're not, then I guess I got to think about this, you know, a little bit more, because I can't. You're right. It's not up to me. I'm not the one that word offends. I'm not the one. I mean, it does offend me, but you know what I'm saying.
Like, right.
It doesn't attack me. You know, I don't care how many times you say cracker or honky. It doesn't mean the same thing. All right, it's not as offensive when some, you know, freaking Trump supporting white jackasses want to say, oh, well, he said cracker, it's the same thing. No, it's not, dude. No, it's not.
No, there's not a history of systematic racism and abuse right. attached to it. It's just a slang term. Right. So I mean, yeah. So I think that's. I mean, I think it's probably, you know, all that problematic stuff from before and after kind of gets this kind of breath of fresh air once you get into Inglourious Basterds, because everybody, I mean, unless you are a terrible person, you can kind of enjoy the glee and kind of also give, you know, to the casual film goer, give yourself a pass to enjoy some really brutal violence that is fun, because that movie is not, they don't use gore as a mechanism for like impact or heaviness. It's just fun. It is like, it's something similar to like Dead Alive in that fact, where this is gore for gore's sake and he's just taking advantage of it.
Yeah, I hear you, man. And it's like I said, it's not my favorite. It's one of my favorite. Actually, Django is one of my favorite too, even though it's a much more, that's a little controversial. I don't know if I ever told you this, and this has nothing to do with killing Nazis, but I watched Django Unchained for the first time, and it was like, it was like 80 degrees out, so I didn't really have the air condition on, you know, like 70s. So I had my windows open, and I had the movie on like 80 on my TV in my bedroom, like the volume all the way up. Because my kids sleep through everything, and they both listen to music while they're sleeping, so that's not going to wake them up. My wife's out. I put that movie on, and I realize about halfway through that the whole neighborhood hears the N-word blaring from my house over and over and over. And the sad part of it is I lived in a very white neighborhood who probably didn't care. But
you may have made some new friends.
I might have, which is a shame. But I felt by the end like I threw my headphones on and listened to the rest of the movie that way, because I was like, oh god, I feel so weird. But yeah, I mean, Tarantino is very divisive for a lot of reasons. The movies I don't like by him tend to be the ones that people love the most. You know, I loved Pulp Fiction the first time I saw it, but each time I watch it, I like it less. You know, I never liked a second of Kill Bill, so I don't know what's wrong with me. But you know, one day you'll probably make me watch those, so I don't have a choice, and maybe my opinion will change. Who knows? But
It's also, I mean, and I think a lot of his films, it's kind of a lot relies on the headspace you're in when you're watching them too. I mean, because for me, like, it was always, I mean, I know I've talked about this a lot, but in my love of, you know, of 70s cinema and you know, things like kung fu, blaxploitation, all these things, especially when I was younger, when he was putting out the, you know, his first round of films, you know,
Jackie Brown,
these were movies, because it wasn't, you know, I mean, the internet was around, but it wasn't, you know, as easy to use. I used it as kind of a guide to go, okay, what movies should I be seeing? What should I be reaching out and trying to find? Because at that time, you know, you would go to a movie rental store that was, you know, 90% new releases and only handfuls of other stuff. So you'd have to go out and actually search things down. So right. It was always a great thing, because you'd get that DVD and you would turn on his commentary, and I would just sit there with a pen and paper and write down the movies he's got. Oh man, I pulled this from this. I pulled this from Coffee. I pulled this from, you know, and I would just write all this shit down. And then set out on my next, you know, like 6 month quest.
Yeah. You watch Jackie Brown and come out with a list of every Pam Grier movie that he ripped off, and you go, "All right, I'm going to go watch a lot of Pam Grier's tits now."
Exactly. I'd be like, "Okay, so I got to go see The Big Birdcage. I got to go see, you know, like all you know, Black Mama, White Mama." And so like I have kind of a different lens when I look at his films, because I associate a lot of my passions now with seeing his films and going, okay, this is what I like. Because at the time, when I was younger, I liked the amount of indie film I liked was like, oh, an art house, you know, theater release kind of thing. And but not, you know, we didn't have the exposure to go and just see a lot of older things until we started tracking it down. So yeah, I always feel like a little indebted. So I'm sure that kind of makes me paint his films with a different brush. But I do want us to cover Django and Jackie Brown somewhere down the road.
Django, I'd love to do in conglomeration with the two films. Like maybe do three, and we do one of the actual Django films, and we do Boss or Boss N, as it's really called.
Oh, I would love that. Fred Williamson is badass.
Yeah, I mean, because those two movies are essentially any Django movie, really, and Boss are the ones that I think are the most influential to that film. And it would be great to cover all three. And I've seen some Django. I haven't seen a lot. But I definitely would love to do that. So that we'll come back to that for sure. As far as this episode goes, we just wanted to talk about killing Nazis. That's it. That's really all it comes down to, right? So is there any kind of real great theological message in either of these films? Probably not. Especially, I don't think that Inglourious Basterds has one so much as, like, it's a straight up revenge film, but it's a revenge film against people who deserve to have revenge against them, and that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And also,
don't fuck with God's chosen people.
There you go, man. Oh man, so this is essentially like the eras of the. Oh man, that's funny. Like he. Oh my God. So now I'm gonna draw parallels to the Bible. And be like, it's like the eras of the kings or of the judges when you know. When they would stop, you know, they turned their back on God, God would let the other people come and beat them. But when they turned back to God, they won and slayed everyone and were back in his graces. So that's kind of what this is.
our very Old Testament take on this. And also, one thing that... and one more thing. I do think it is kind of a fun and healthy outlet with viewing, right. You know, these tragedies and these horrible things from the past, allowing groups that have been marginalized and persecuted over time to be able to enjoy a revenge fantasy. It's not going to change what happened, but I think it's always great to see society progressing to a point where everyone can get on board, view these through history's lenses. And be able to, you know, remember these atrocities, but also be able to enjoy seeing a group like that be able to get back at the people who caused this pain. So,
And I mean, obviously, there's no anyone who's listened to our podcast knows we're both quite the liberals. You know, I can only speak for myself, but I don't really fit on the American spectrum of politics at all. So, you know, I mean, I'm very liberal in a lot of ways. Obviously, we're very much offended by this crap. But here's the thing that gets me, right, is that the stuff that's happening in real life right now with, like, you know, a Nazi march, you know, last month, you know, just the shit, the brazenness of white supremacists since the Trump nomination and election are just, it's just so insane. And anyone who wants to be like, oh, well, don't talk politics. You know what? This isn't politics. It's common human decency, right? Saying, fuck you, Nazis, and not supporting Nazis, and condemning Nazis, none of that's political. That's literally just being a fucking human being. So I'm going to step down off my soapbox for a minute. But seriously, like, that's seriously how I feel. Like, I just – so you know, we were talking about all this shit going down, and I was like, you know, we just got to watch some Nazis get killed.
Exactly.
So that's why we decided to do this, you know?
Yeah, and the piggyback off that, I mean, I love that you mentioned that. Yeah, this isn't when it comes to Nazis and you know, what we're seeing in a rise in white supremacy and just an embracing of just kind of this internet culture coming to life. We have to remember a lot of these people, and especially from our podcast, which, you know, we've mentioned a few times, We're both people of faith. We both have a belief system of forgiveness. And we have to remember, a lot of these people are just, they're angry. They feel like they've been forgotten. They don't see themselves aligning with Republicans or Democrats. They're angry at a lot more. And people are predators. They prey on this anger, this unhappiness. And I just think it's important that as people of faith, we remember that and give these people a chance to change what they're doing, because why someone would say I'm a Nazi is or a white supremacist is absurd at this point. But it's there's a lot more going on in these people's lives, and I just hope that, you know, for all these young people out there, that they that they're able to, you know, find that peace and be able to knock this bullshit off.
Right. I mean, and so, you know, with that in mind, you know, you brought it up too with the Green Room. A lot of those kids in that movie were just, you know, kids who didn't have family and friends to run to, and the Nazis gave them a family and friends to run to. You know what I mean?
The kids.
And yeah, you're right. Yeah. And they just liked the music. Like you said, once the music started, it didn't give a shit anymore about the fact that they just got flipped off by the band, because they said, fuck, this is good music, and we're amongst our friends. We're going to have a good time.
Right. You know? And all the kids I grew up that ended up with these kinds of, you know, opinions and alliances, they were all basically the same kind of person. They were angry, lonely, white, suburban kids who just didn't feel like they were a part of something. And I think I think white supremacy and a lot of that really just kind of preys on that personality type. Because there's something that those people need, and I guess they get it from, you know, Sig Heiling with their buddies and having some sort of common thread. But, you know, I hope a lot of these kids get a chance to kind of think about how they're, you know, what they're, you know, putting out in the universe, which is just, definitely, which is just fucking hate.
Right. And, you know, and I think we'll be revisiting, discussion of white supremacy and Nazis, both in a throwaway manner of, you know, things like She-Wolf of the SS, but also probably again in some serious films down the road, like, I definitely would love to tackle, you know, obviously it's a big Hollywood film, but it's still dark and dirty, you know, something like, you know, American History X and some of those type of films. Yeah. God, there's some great films. Oh God, that we got to come to that. Fight for Your Life. So long.
Yeah, that is.
And there's so many great films about this race and hate and stuff that I do want to tackle. And we'll get there. Especially, I know we're going to get there. In February, we're Blaxploitation Month, and a lot of the themes in Blaxploitation, as cheesy as some of the Blaxploitation is, some of it's got some real deep shit behind it that's worth really unpacking. So I'm looking forward to that. And as much as we had a blast watching Nazis get killed, I hope everybody that's listening knows how serious the times we're living in are and the stuff that's going on and how important it is to support people. And even, you know, again, the people that are at these rallies and at these things, they're still people. As much as I want to fucking punch them in the face and whatever, you know, some of them will change and some of them can change, and helping people to get to a place to change is good work. So if you have it in you to support people, not what they're saying, don't support what they say and do there, but support them as human beings and help them change, you know, you can be like, you know, that person that helps, you know, them see that's not the world that we're trying to create here. So with that, why don't we spend a couple minutes talking about some of the interesting things we have seen or read or whatever, and then make a recommendation or two of stuff that other people can check out when we go, since, you know, we should wrap this stuff up. So, Blaine, anything interesting that you've had the chance to watch lately, whether it has anything to do with this or not?
Oh my gosh, yeah. I am currently, you know, neck deep in the Buried Alive Film Festival as we try to put together the schedule here. So right. I'm gonna be quick. I mean, I've probably watched, I don't know, 40 movies since we've reviewed. But the ones I really wanted to mention is Mother, which just released. We're recording this on September 17th, so it just released on Thursday. Got a chance to see it. It's incredibly smart. I guess it's getting a pretty divisive release, but definitely blew me away. I won't be surprised if it's in my top five of the year. Also got a chance to revisit the RoboCop films. I made my way all the way through 1, 2, 3, as well as the Sci-Fi channel releases, which should be releasing around the same time as this, with Misspent Matinee, where we revisit that classic film from 30 years ago.
Sci-Fi Channel releases. Why am I not aware of what this is?
Oh, yeah, they kept putting out RoboCop movies like Meltdown and And there's these weird, super, super cheap.
Are they good?
No. No.
are they good as far as, like, I mean, maybe their sci-fi quality, but are, like, the stories interesting? Or, you know, is the acting decent or no?
I mean, the acting's pretty bad. A lot of the scripts, it feels like a 90s or early 2000s TV show more than an actual movie. But, I mean, there's still some fun stuff in there. I mean, like, it feels more like how they marketed the comic books and the toys than the actual movies. There's no, like, satire. It's just kind of the story of Murphy going through wasting bad dudes. And, I mean, that, so yeah, I mean, I would check it. I would check it out if you're ever bored. They're super cheap, like on Amazon. You can get them for like $2 or $3, $4 a piece.
Okay. Yeah, I'll definitely have to check that out sometime. But mind you, I don't think the first one's any good, so that's a whole other story.
Yeah, but there's too much in there. But I wanted to do a big shout out to a filmmaker. I believe from Mexico, a guy named Luciano de Azevedo. I know I'm destroying your name, but I got a chance to see two of his short films, one called Cabrito and one called Rosalita. That could be some of the best filmmaking I've seen in years. Incredibly gross, very grimy horror films that tell amazing stories over the course of about 20 to 25 minutes. And if you get a chance, I'm not sure how they're available right now, but I would keep an eye out. Maybe follow them on, you know, on Twitter and Facebook and see, and just keep up, because as soon as those get a chance to release. If you are a fan of, you know, films from people like Alex de Iglesias and you know, films like Asmodexia and a lot of this Spanish horror, I think you're going to love this. It reminds me a lot of, like, Here Comes the Devil, but grosser. I just want to at least mention those, because that guy came out of left field for me, and I'm just waiting for him to do something else. So, yeah, I mean, I watched a bunch of other, that was a bunch of bullshit, but
that's good. I've watched a shit ton of stuff too. I mean, most recently, as far as like stuff I really liked, I was able to check out some screeners of a few films. You know, so most of the newer stuff I checked out most recently hasn't jumped out at me a ton, except for one film which premiered at TIFF Midnight Madness this week, Downrange. And that was pretty good. Why am I going blank on the guy's name?
The guy that made Versus and Azuki and Midnight Meat Train, right?
Ryohei Kitamura, I think that's it. I think that's how I pronounce it, something like that. He did a film called No One Lives. He did Final Wars, Godzilla Final Wars, bunch of anime. The film's pretty good. It's another one, a lot with a little kind of film. It doesn't really have a ton of set pieces. It all takes place in one place. And it's about kids who are on their way home from college for a break or something like that. I didn't quite get where they all were headed. So they didn't even really know each other. They're all riding together. So that's what, you know, I'm pretty sure it was just dropping each other off kind of thing. And they get a flat tire and all of a sudden, people start dying, and we'll just leave it at that. And it's pretty crazy. It's tight. It's not long. It all takes place in open daylight until the like final like climax, and that's because it gets dark out, because they're all kind of stranded in the middle of the desert with like no cops, no one driving by, no cell signal, you know, all that stuff. So. Kind of crazy, really interesting film, and there'll be a by the time this is podcast is up, there'll be a review up on Farsighted. So, actually, you know what? I lied. I think I'm doing this review for Synapse. So you can head over to Synapse.co, one of the other websites I write for, and there'll be a review over there. It was really interesting. Maybe I'll get them to send you a copy, Blaine, even though you have 19 other things to do. Maybe you could write about it for our site. So. Really interesting film though, and I've seen a lot of other stuff. I saw Baby Driver this week, fucking awesome.
Yes.
And as much as it's not in any way a gory exploitation film, I will say that one of the kills towards the end, when one of the team members dies, I won't even say who it is amazing. Like, it's just amazing. And I won't go any further because I don't want to give it away. But that made me think, oh, damn, that's a great horror kill in a non-horror movie.
Oh, and I think that Jamie Foxx is the best villain I've seen this year in Baby Driver.
He's so good. I love, like, one of the first times he meets him, you know, he challenges that Baby's not listening because he's got his headphones in. And, Baby reads lips, and so he knows the entire plan. And then Kevin Spacey says, "That's my baby." And he goes, fuck your baby. Something about that line just gets me. Like, I crack up. Fuck your baby. He just, you know, I don't know. It just was great. I mean, obviously, I rewatched Firewalk with Me this week. I watched a bunch of stuff. Watched Devilfish because we were going to talk about it on a podcast, and we decided we didn't have enough to say. So that was bad. I watched a movie called Jungle Trap that finally got a release that was from 1990. And yes. They just got it out. Let me tell you what, the soundtrack's really interesting. The movie's not.
No, because I
don't do shot on video as much as some people, like that era, that late 80s, early 90s, or even mid 80s. I don't dig that stuff that much. So if you like stuff like Sledgehammer and Pieces and that kind of shit, you might find something interesting. Although those are both better scripts than this one, I'll say that. The soundtrack, though, was just recorded last year. Because the movie was found unfinished. And so it's by a band called Taking by Savages, who's kind of like a regular alt-rock band, but they did that kind of like dark wave thing that's popular now with the soundtrack. That was big in the 80s, but they didn't call it dark wave then, you know? That just heavy, dark synth stuff. It's cool. And the soundtrack's really cool. I got a chance to review that for Synapse. It was a... kind of a co-review where I didn't talk a ton about the movie. I talked a lot more about the soundtrack because I got a vinyl copy of the soundtrack to review, and that was really cool. So,
yeah, and just to ask you, is that that's from James Bryan, right? The guy who made like Don't Go in the Woods and Hell Riders and like Run Coyote Run. I think so.
Was it
I've been really curious to see it because a lot of his earlier flicks. Happened to be like all the bullshit that I was like renting from like this gas station rental shop back in
high
school.
I mean, it's certainly no Don't Go in the Woods or Lady Street Fighter or something like that. It's not like one of his better films at all. Or Hell Riders is one I've wanted to see from him for a long time. I never did. This is, this was, like I said, it was made in 1990, but it wasn't released until last year in any way. And then it just came out for home video release. Oh. I've yet to see a review above 2.5 stars. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But on the other hand, I will say, as far as recommendations go, you know, so there's a little bit of what I'm not going to recommend a movie. I'm going to recommend a few books. If people are interested in the whole notion of these of people who lived in this skinhead world and have changed their lives, there's actually a couple great autobiographies and biographies out there of people. You would even, when you read them, go, oh, wow, American History X totally stole some of their storyline from some of these. Christian Piccolini, I believe is how you pronounce his name, wrote one about called like, and of course I'll see if I can find the actual title, but he was one of the big early skinheads in America who really got a lot of it going, and he's completely turned his back on it at this point, and wrote a book about, you know, his life and getting out of it and all that. The book was called Romantic Violence: Memoirs of American Skinhead. Really good book. And there's a handful of others that I would definitely recommend. So if anyone's interested in some of this stuff, they could shoot me in a line, either at, our email address, which, by the way, I finally set up a Grindhouse Messiah email address. It's grindhousemessiah@gmail.com. Woo! But we also have farsightedblog@gmail, or you could just email me, justcharlesharlan@gmail, or you could just tweet us, whatever. But if you get at me, I'll give you a list of recommended reading, because I've spent a lot of time in reading about two different things that really have interested me. One of them being the white supremacist movement. Not just white supremacy, just racially motivated gang stuff interests me. Both black and white, but more on the white supremacist side, because there's a lot of bullshit they've done, and I've been very against them for a long time, and just seeing some of their stories is really interesting. And in addition, Frankie Meek is another one, a guy who did an autobiography of a recovering skinhead. He started the group Life After Hate. He's actually spent some time in the Philly area, and so I got to talk to him once or twice, and somebody that has expressed interest in maybe coming on a podcast at some point, so maybe we can integrate him if we do like American History X. But man, there's so many of these books. And then the other thing that I've pretty obsessed with over my lifespan reading about is black metal, even though I don't even listen to black metal, just because that whole scene is beyond interesting to me, which right now I'm back into it again because the lovely folks over at Last Podcast on the Left, who are one of my favorite podcasts, they've been doing a series on black metal, which is making me laugh my ass off because of how right they are about some of the ridiculous shit that went on in that. But so that's just a couple of little short things. But if you're interested in reading more about that, besides Christian Piccolini's book or Frankie Meek's book, I could give you a list of some other really interesting books, both in a more casual biography sense, as well as some books I have that are like actual like social science books on how the recruiting and stuff works, you know. So I'm a nerd about a lot of that stuff. So and why don't we wrap us up with a recommendation or two from you?
Oh yeah, I know you guys aren't gonna read, so I made. I'm joking. I'm just kidding. I can't read. My suggestion, I went a completely different route with a little film released by Empire Pictures back in 1986 called Crawl Space, starring the always fantastic Klaus Kinski from, you know, Nosferatu and a lot of the Werner Herzog films. And this is about a landlord in this little apartment building who is, you know, brutalizing women and terrorizing everyone, and it comes to find out that his motivations is that he's the son of a Nazi. And it's got a lot. I went the opposite way. We talked about stuff that was, you know, dealing with him as more realism. This is more or less taking a lot of jabs at him. Klaus Kinski gives a crazy performance as the Nazi son.
Doesn't he give a crazy performance? Kinski's a nut.
Always. Yeah, and that gets to the biggest reason why I want to suggest this film is pick up the Blu-ray release that was put out a few years ago by Scream Factory. It has a documentary on it called Please Kill Mr. Kinski. And it is all about when they were making the film. He was so awful. Because the director of this is David Schmoller, the guy who made, like, Tourist Trap, Puppet Master, Catacombs. Did a lot of stuff with Charles Band and Empire Pictures. And it's all about how terrible he was on set, and how eventually the producers and the investors started asking if he could just, because they had such a big insurance policy on him, if they could just scrap the movie and just kill Klaus Kinski and just take the insurance and just call it a day, because it was such a troubled thing. He would have to go back and forth. They would scream and threaten to kill each other the whole time. He wouldn't, you know, he'd spit in the director's face. He'd terrorize actresses. So it's just another fun little glimpse into the actual human being monster of Klaus Kinski. So that is the best part. I mean, Crawl Space in itself is a really fun kind of just like ugly, nasty slasher that kind of gets forgotten. But that short film small documentary on there is just phenomenal. So that's the fun.
So that's worth the price of admission right there, is what you're saying.
It really is. It's worth paying the like $12-$13 on the Blu-ray just to see that. It may be one of those things where you might be able to find that short on YouTube as well. But yeah, definitely worth checking out. And I mean, I wanted to avoid my very bizarre love of sexy Nazi movies, so I had to try my best not to pick Gestapo's Last Orgy, or SS Love Camp.
You'll have a chance to recommend those one day, don't worry.
Absolutely. But yeah, that's my suggestion for the week. But you know, thanks for everybody. You know, hanging with us. I know we had a little bit of a break between our last couple of episodes, but we're going to be back relatively quickly.
Oh yeah, I mean, you're going to hear this episode later this week. There's going to be a bonus from with a bunch of Fabio Frizzi music and a giveaway of Fabio Frizzi tickets. If you're anywhere in the New York City area at the end of October, we're giving away two tickets to see him live perform some of the big hits he had scoring, Fulci movies primarily, but several other stuff. But there's a couple different shows, and one of them's actually, I believe they're showing The Beyond, and he's actually playing the entire score live with it. So there's a whole bunch of crazy stuff he's doing on this tour. But the New York City shows are most interesting, and we're lucky enough to be able to give away some tickets. So that's going to be really cool. So tune into that. You can win Martial Arts Kid on this episode and that on that episode. And, God, we're going to have a bunch of giveaways coming up, which is really cool. Then we've got an episode that will pop up next week with the guys from movie Union Furnace. We're going to talk about their movie and some of the inspirations of their movie. And then we're going to be talking John Waters at the very end of the month, beginning of October, before we get into our Halloween mode, where we're going to be kind of trying to, see you guys roughly weekly with some of the other writers from Farsighted, inviting them to share some of their favorite horror movies. So this is going to be a really fun and busy time for us. And then we just solidified crossover that we're going to be doing now in December with a podcast that we totally think you should check out called Victims and Villains. And it's like a nerd culture podcast with all different nerdy stuff. But they also raise money and awareness for suicide prevention and mental health. So really awesome people that we're excited to get a chance to do some Gremlins talk with. So again, guys, it's going to be a really busy time. The next few weeks you should be seeing a lot of us. So thanks a lot for coming by. And check out some great Nazi killing. If you have some suggestions of Nazi killing we should watch, tell us, man. We're into it. And send us any feedback. Always rate and review. And, hey, Blaine, if I remember correctly, you said you got a few digital codes laying around, right? So if people will rate and review us and send us a screenshot, we will we'll hook you up with some free swag.
Absolutely, yeah. If you go on there, give us 5-star reviews. Let us know what you think of the podcast, and then just tag either Grindhouse Messiah or myself at Mondo McLaren, and I'll make sure to just email that over to you right away, and you will have some new releases for you to download.
Awesome. So thanks, guys, and Blaine, if you could take us out.
All right. Thanks again, everybody. We will see you soon, and peace.
I couldn't end a podcast without Blaine saying peace, so.
There's a war coming down between my breasts and mine. I don't want no war. Going down tonight.
Stop this war. Stop this war. Civilization, ha, I call it empathy. I call this pussy, you know, I still cannot believe it. Our evolution now has gone the way of aim. We'll be right back.
you gotta come right, unity, as one, stand together, unity, evolution gotta come, unity.
I got jury duty tomorrow, so hopefully I'll be done early when they tell me I'm unfit to help.
You might not be unfit.
Oh, when I tell them that I'm from the planet Klaxar and I've got John the Baptist's head that got swapped out with mine.